Stories of One Witness radio broadcast coming to you today from Prayer Mountain in the Ozarks, and we're in an exciting study of the book of Revelation. And the book of Revelation has to do with a time period. Most of it has to do with a seven-year period that we call the tribulation period. Now, I want to talk to you about that seven-year period. In fact, I want to talk to you today about time itself. I was on my first trip. I've been 9 times to Australia, but on my first trip, I was just enamored by the difference in time. I mean, we were actually on a day ahead. And so when we came back and flew over the Pacific back home, actually, I arrived in LA before I left in Sydney. And when we passed the international dateline, the pilot came online and said, "We have just passed the international dateline." And I had been thinking about the time. In fact, day or two before, I had called home and talked to my grandson, Jared. And I said, "Jared, this is Mimi, and I'm calling you from tomorrow. Don't worry about yesterday. It turned out all right." So I knew that would get him going. He was an inquisitive little kid. And would have asked his mom and me in questions about that. But thinking about it, when we passed the international dateline, the pilot came on and said that we had done so, and immediately I heard from the Lord. And that's when he gave me this revelation about time. He said, "God created time precisely, mathematically, scientifically. He measured out a portion of eternity, cut out a portion of eternity, and called it time. Time was created for the usefulness of God. Every second counts off time, marks off time until the end of time, and its usefulness to God." So this thing that we call time, it says in Isaiah 57 that he is the eternal one, and he lives in eternity. But he's dealing with man on this yardstick of time that he measured out to settle everything. That Genesis opened and the fall opened, it's going to be settled by the book of Revelation. Now, in the very invention of time, it's marked by sevens. And you'll see in the book of Revelation that it's marked by sevens. God has a God calendar. It is not the Jewish calendar, it's the God calendar. And it's how he marked off on his calendar, he has dates circled. When I was a little kid, I used to, circle my birthday, circle Christmas, count the days till that time. God has certain days circled in his calendar. And you can see those days in the 23rd chapter of Leviticus. This is the sacred calendar of the history of redemption. It foretells and sets forth the great plan of redemption. That's what David Barron says. And the numerical Bible calls it the great calendar of prophecy. There are in this great calendar of time and circled dates, which we know Jesus already fulfilled, Passover, for instance, and the Holy Spirit outpouring fulfilled Pentecost. But in this chapter, the 7th chapter, 23rd chapter of Leviticus, there are 7 appointed seasons or moeds, 7 marks in Scripture, the sacred measurement of time. And there are 7 moeds or circled dates in the first 7 months. So without going through all of those different circle dates on God's calendar, we're going to go to his teaching to us about the years themselves and that the cycles of years are in sevens. So in Leviticus chapter 25, verse 8. No, I think we'll start earlier than that. We'll start in the first verse. Chapter 25, the Lord spoke unto Moses in Mount Sinai. That's when he was up there with God, saying, "Speak unto the children of Israel and say unto them, when you come into the land which I give you, the land shall keep a Sabbath unto the Lord. 6 years you shall sow your field, and 6 years you shall prune your vineyard and gather in the fruit thereof. But in the 7th year shall be a Sabbath of rest unto the land, a Sabbath for the Lord. You shall neither sow your field nor prune your vineyard." So every 7 years, They were to let the land rest in that seventh or sabbatical year. The seventh year of a seven-year cycle is the sabbatical year, and it's the Shemitah year. The Shemitah year, they do not plant anything, and they don't sow, nor do they prune. They don't attend to that land, to their vineyards in any way. They let them rest. So we see that the years themselves are in cycles of seven years, with the seventh year being the sabbatical year, the rest year, the Shemitah year. I'll say that again for you, the Shemitah year. In verse 8, the Lord continues, "And you shall number seven Sabbaths of years unto thee, seven times 7 years. And the space of the seven Sabbaths of years shall be unto you 49 years. These are weeks of years. A week of years is 7 years. Then, verse 9, shall you cause the trumpet of the Jubilee to sound on the 10th day of the 7th month in the Day of Atonement? Shall you make the trumpet sound throughout all your land?" Now, for the civic year, the Jews begin counting from Rosh Hashanah, the beginning of the year, which is over in either September or October of the way we count time. And the 10th day of that month is the Day of Atonement. Rosh Hashanah is the beginning, or the New Year's Day. Then you count 10 days from there, and you get the Day of Atonement. So he says, in the 7th year, you are to cause the trumpet to sound on the Day of Atonement. And you shall make the trumpet sound throughout all your land. And you shall hallow the 50th year and proclaim liberty throughout all the land unto all the inhabitants thereof. It shall be a jubilee unto you, and you shall return every man unto his possession, and you shall return every man unto his family. A jubilee shall that 50th year be unto you. You shall not sow nor reap in that year, for the jubilee shall be holy unto you. And you shall eat the increase of the field. In the year of this jubilee, you shall return every man unto his possession. This year of jubilee is wonderful, marvelous year. So every year, and these things we're told in the book of Corinthians, that they happen to show us things. They're patterns. So God showed us through the life of the Jews, you have 7 years, you let the land rest, you have another seven, you let the land rest in the seventh year, and seven times seven, 49 years, and in the 50th year, blow that trumpet, jubilee's coming. Every man gets everything back, he gets his original possessions back, everything is restored, the slaves go free, everything wonderful happens in that glorious year of jubilee. And so the Jews in Israel still keep the Shemitah year. The ones who are close to the book, you know, and have land that they farm, I've seen many of them, they still do not plant in that seventh year. That's called the Shemitah year. There are also others who even don't have land. They keep it in their own special way. Now, as far as I can tell right now, none of them know when the Jubilee is. But they do know when the Shemitahs are. And so we have this wonderful example before us of the Shemitah. Now, I kept hearing about, you know, online, how we can do everything, and you check things out. And so back in 1999, I kept hearing about September 11, 1999. Now, I'm not saying September 11, 2000 or 2001. I'm saying 1999. And I kept hearing it called among Jewish, the pages that I checked, and it was before September 11, 1999 came. I kept hearing it called the day that everything changes. And I thought, what is that? Well, I happened to be in Israel in 1999, and I was there with my friends, Lynn and Lucy. If you know me very well, you know who they are. Lynn Hammond and Lucy McKee, and Lucy's husband, Keter, was with us. And we were in Jerusalem, and we were going to go to Mea Shearim that day. That's the very, that's the section where the black coats are, the very ultra-Orthodox. And they have big signs up, don't come in here, you know, looking with your skin showing and things like that. New York Jews, they say, don't come in here looking immodest. And so we went to that section. I told Lynn and Lucy, now, wipe off that makeup and let's tone down and go over there to Meisharim. And so we went there. Lynn and Lucy are so beautiful, they stood out anyway. And the taxi driver on the way over said, you can get the best falafels in Meisharim. We said, take us there. So we stood in line at the falafel stand. It was a long line. And when we got to the end and got our falafels, the man said, would you like to eat these in the back? He didn't say that to anyone else. And we said, yes. So we went in the back, and there we discovered that the buildings of the Meisharim are on the street, right up on the sidewalk. But behind the buildings, there's courtyards, and the people live up in the apartments. They hang their wash out. The kids are playing. And there were two picnic tables back there. He hadn't said that to anyone else but us. And on the other picnic table sitting there was a man that I would call ultra-Orthodox. And he opened the conversation by saying, are you those who believe that Yeshua is the Mashiach? And I said, yes. And he said, well, I don't. And I said, well, okay, we do. And then he just kept right on talking. Well, I thought, well, since he's talking, you know, they normally don't speak to anyone, especially to women. I said, since he's talking, I'm going to ask him. I said, what is this I'm hearing about September 11, 1999, the day that everything changes? He rolled his eyes in his head, and he said, oh, it's been prophesied for hundreds of years that this day would come and that on this day, everything would change. And so I went to another rabbi. Well, I think he's a teacher, not a rabbi. And I said, what about this? And he said, well, for one thing, the final judgment of the nations begins. And then he told me that the old prophecy said on Rosh Hashanah, in the first Shemitah year following the day that everything changes, a war cycle will begin. That Rosh Hashanah was September 29, 2000. And that was the day the Al-Aqsa Intifada began, following the Oslo Peace Accords, on the excuse that it was because Ariel Sharon went to the Temple Mount to pray. That war cycle began. And the war cycle, which began in the Shemitah year, I was told by my teacher friend, my Jewish teacher friend, the war cycle, which begins in the Shemitah year, will continue through a Shemitah year. How many Shemitahs? They don't know. But it will continue until the Great War, at the end of the war cycle, when the Mashiach ben David, the King Messiah, will come, set his feet down on the Mount of Olives. So, according to the ancient prophecy, a war cycle began on September 29, 2000, and will continue until that Great War, when the Messiah comes, puts his feet down, and defeats and sends the Antichrist, well, all that's written in the 14th chapter of Zechariah. And so these Shemitah years, these seven-year cycles, are how time is divided. And we're going to see that the one whole cycle is covered in the tribulation period. This is Billy Brim saying, Shalom until tomorrow.